brought my little MP3 player. Those of you who've been around for a while know that that means I brought a song. I brought a song I wanted to share with you. I won't play the whole thing, just a few lines so you get a taste of it for it. Julie Lee and the Baby Daddies recorded it in 2011. But it was written by Carly Simon back in 1974 for her album Hot Cakes. And some of you were around then. That was a pretty big album, very successful. The song is called My Older Sister. And it's a quick snapshot of a little girl growing up with an older sister, what that's like. Like I said, won't play the whole thing, but you'll love it. We'll see how that goes. Can you hear enough? How's that? Triggers memories, doesn't it? Triggers memories. I don't know if you caught the lines. I loved, you know, she just says, she rides in the front seat, and the picture's right there, me in the back seat. Exactly. She goes to bed an hour later. Yeah? Knew that. Done that. Throwing French phrases around the room. Yeah, that's maybe a little older there, you know, you're no longer in the back seat, but she's just perfect, you know. And then she has the ice skates and the legs that fit right in. I mean, and then all the boys and stuff. It's, it would be lovely to be just her. She's perfect. She's a goddess. I just want to be like her. Well, the final lines are, she turns everybody's heads while I wear her last year's threads with patches and stitches and a turned up hem. Oh, but to be, just once to be, my older sister. I know about wearing hand-me-downs. I always wanted an older sister, but I had to share a room with my older brother. And then we both had to put up with a little sister. And that's a totally different story because we felt that she always seemed to get away with everything. You know what that feels like? Sail effortlessly through situations where we remembered having to paddle real hard against parental currents. You know that feeling? If you grew up with siblings, none of this will sound foreign to you. You've seen it, you've been there, you've felt it. One reason I wanted to play this song is that our scriptures reflect throughout a deep, deep awareness of the impact of sibling relationships on individuals and families. But most of the stories are about brothers. So if you have a moment when your mind wants to wander, maybe right now, I don't know, see how many stories you can remember with sisters in them whose names aren't Mary and Martha. Okay, little homework, or, you know, feel free to just wander off right now. Bible, first story. First story with human beings in it. Story about the first man and the first woman. And the very next story is about their boys, Cain and Abel. And we know how that one ended for the younger of the two brothers. Then if you continue to read through Genesis, all those stories about, you know, our deepest roots, our oldest wounds, soon you encounter Ishmael and his brother Isaac, then Esau and his brother Jacob. And finally, you get to all the sons of Jacob and their little brother Joseph. And in each of these generations, every single time, the little brother turns out to be the one whose story we remember. Isn't that curious? Today's story from the Gospel of Luke is similar in that regard. Some point in the past, I don't really know when it happened, somebody decided to add section headings to the text. And ever since, this little story has been known as the parable of the prodigal son, which is the younger of the two. But it is, of course, just as much a story about the prodigal father, as well as the son who resents his brother and his father. Jesus introduces the story as one about a man who had two sons, and that's what it is. Neither son is a particularly attractive character. The younger is disrespectful, quite self-absorbed, reckless, perhaps a little manipulative. The older one definitely comes across as heartless, resentful, jealous, petty, you know, not a fun guy to be around, I think. But whether we like it or not, we can identify with each of them, at least to a degree. Men and women alike, I presume. We wonder what it might be like to be so brave and just leave home to go and see the world. Sure, he's reckless, but he's young, and we admire his adventurous spirit. Perhaps you were once just like him. Or perhaps you find yourself humming quietly, oh, but to be that little brother, I don't know. Or do you find it easier to relate to that firstborn, the responsible one, the one who does what he says, shows up on time, takes care of the family business, stays around when the other one goes and play? Doesn't he have a point, you say to yourself? And perhaps you know all too well what it's like to make sacrifices every day, and no one seems to care, let alone appreciate or celebrate what you do. Is it too much to ask to be treated fairly? The property had been divided. Each one had been given a fair share, and the younger chose to cash it all in and burn through it. Okay, maybe good to give somebody a second chance, sure. Give him work to do, give him food to eat, give him a roof over his head, but a party? A party? That fatted calf they killed for the barbecue? Whose was it? Think about that. Whose was it after the property had been divided between the two boys? Whose? Huh? How's that for irony? Have a party, boy. Well, the father is perhaps the most confusing character of all. Apparently, he doesn't believe that children who are old enough to go away should also be ready to live with the consequences of their choices. When the younger son comes home, broke, humiliated, hungry, wonder what he smelled like, you know, after all that time with the pigs. Dad is beside himself, acting like a fool, forgetting all that is proper for a grown man in that ancient culture and what most of us today would consider reasonable or wise. He runs down the road, throws his arms around the kid, shouting orders over his shoulders between hugs. Bring the rope, the best one. Where's the ring? Put it on his finger. Oh, sandals, put some shoes on that kid and kill the fatted calf. Let's party. Let's celebrate. This is my son. He was dead, and now he's alive again. Only Jesus could have come up with a story like that. In our version of the story, the younger son would have some explaining to do. In our story, the father would be waiting in the house, sitting in his chair, and you know what chair that is, arms folded, a stern look on his face. He would listen to what the young man had to say for himself, and then perhaps he would look at him and say, "Well, son, I'm glad you've come to see the foolishness of your choices and the error of your ways. I hope you learned your lesson. Now, I want you to go and help your brother in the field." In our story, there wouldn't be a party. But it's not our story. It's Jesus' story for us. It's the gospel. Sinners felt at home in the company of Jesus. Even notorious sinners who were shunned by everybody in town came near to listen to him or just to be around him. He didn't avoid them. He didn't turn them away. He didn't mind being seen with them. And everybody knew he even broke bread with them, openly. People with a deep concern for what is right were grumbling. This fella welcomes sinners and eats with them. Couldn't he at least wait until they've changed their ways? Jesus' actions were confusing to them. And their hearts were pulled back and forth between wanting to understand, trying to wrap their minds around this, and just demanding an explanation. Tell us what you're doing. What is going on here? In response, Jesus tells us stories about the joy of heaven. God's stories that help us to see who he is and what he is doing. He tells us about a shepherd who lost one of his 100 sheep, worried out of his mind when searching for it. And when at last he found it, he was overjoyed, called together his friends and neighbors to rejoice with him. He tells us about a woman who had 10 silver coins, just 10, and one of them got lost. So she got a lamp and a broom, and she swept the house from top to bottom, searched carefully for it until she found it. And then she called together her friends and neighbors to rejoice with her. Just so, Jesus tells us, just so there's joy in heaven over one sinner who repents. And then Jesus tells the story about the father and his two sons. And when he gets to the end, where the older of the two boys stands outside the house, light, music, laughter pouring through the windows, the father pleading with him to come in and rejoice with him. When he gets to the end of the story, Jesus looks at us and he says, "Come on in. Come on in where mercy has prepared a feast that fairness cannot host. Come on in, for only love can heal what lovelessness has wounded." The story, it turns out, is not about who is the golden boy and who is the other one. The story, the gospel, is about God's reckless extravagance in bringing about our reconciliation, overcoming the deep rifts within us and between us, and healing the wound of sin. In the end, it doesn't matter if we got lost wandering off to a distant country, or if we got lost never leaving at all. It doesn't matter how we forgot that we are not strangers or each other's keepers, but rather each other's brothers and sisters. All of us members of the family of God. What does matter is that God delights in looking for us, calling us, finding and reminding us, and pleading with us, waiting with us, rejoicing with us. What does matter is that God does not treat the wound of God's people carelessly, but with great compassion and power to save, until there is peace, and all sit at table in the house of laughter and light, until each of us, every single one of us, hear these words and never, never forget again. Child, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. May it be so. Amen.